Welcome to episode number 356 of the Family Podcast Network. Today we're going to go through a little bit of a Media Sucks Wednesday. We've got quite a few topics. This is the day where we take shows that you guys have sent over to us. First off, we're going to talk a little bit about the HPV vaccination. We had a listener write in and ask about their kid being close to being a teenager. Should they let their kid or should they get their kid the HPV vaccination? We're also going to talk a little bit about preschoolers may not actually need naps. That's right, naps may actually be making it worse for your kiddos. We're going to talk just a little bit about that. You guys also sent in several articles today about measles and about the vaccinations in general, not just the HPV vaccination that y'all wanted to cover. Should we vaccinate our child? We had a show over that a while back, created a lot of turmoil and a lot of good stuff. We're definitely going to talk about that. And last, a true topic that is near and dear to my heart, stay-at-moms need an annual leave too. That's right, we're going to talk a little bit today about stay-at-home moms getting away from the house and how important that is here at the Homestead Day Gibson. Stay tuned for that and more.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network. Here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. It doesn't matter if you're expecting, if you're a brand new mom and dad, or even if you're a longtime seasoned parent, there is always something we can do to take our parenting to the next level. The date today is February the 18th, 2015. Our topic for today is Media Sucks Wednesday. That's right, guys. I promise you, I had a Media Sucks Wednesday. For those of you guys who are new listeners, we normally do the Media Sucks Wednesday show on Monday. This week, we did not do it. Let me tell you why. So I cranked open, you know, last week, we lost a very dear friend of the Family Podcast Network. It was Lappy. Lappy's been a good long friend of the Family Podcast Network, been here as long as the show has been here. And that was my Apple MacBook Pro that has helped me record through GarageBand all of these shows that you guys have heard since the early parts of 2011. Well, Lappy just pooped itself out last week, and we had cranked it up, and it was running fine. It was getting kind of glitchy, so I shut it off, and I restarted it back up, and she never came back to life. And we tried a couple times, a few things, a couple tricks, and she was done for. So, anyway, we had a backup plan for this. Now, I had no idea how intensive this was. And our backup plan was another computer that we had. We had a copy of Windows 8, and I managed to stumble across something called Adobe Audition Creative Content 2014, which is a beautiful recording studio. And I managed to get into this through my work for an incredibly low discount. And so it was great. I set this thing up and got really cocky on Sunday night, getting ready for Monday's show. I had no flipping idea how to run this thing. Let me tell you, you know, GarageBand can't do most of the stuff that this thing can do. But let me tell you, what GarageBand can do, it makes it really easy. It does it all for you. And let me tell you, I sat down with this Adobe Audition and realized Sunday night about 2 o'clock in the morning, I had gotten into way more than I had bitten off. So I watched videos until 2 in the morning on Monday just for you guys. And we spent a little more time more. Even now, it's 12:30. I'm normally done by now. And I'm starting to mix down my show. And here we are. At this point, I am sitting down just finally getting through enough videos that I was able to do what I needed to do today. And now we're sitting here doing a little bit of recording and excited to get into a new show with you guys today. The sound is sounding pretty good. I'm going to have to play with some settings before I get this right. If y'all hear any funny buzzing or anything like that, I apologize in advance. All right, I want to go ahead and start wrapping it up. We're getting a long intro segment. For those of you guys who know me, you know me well. Y'all know the spiel. And if you want to become a PTACer, don't forget to do that. Supporting members, you get access to cool stuff that only members get, and whenever you do that, you also help support this show at 30 cents per episode. If you have any questions, comments, you guys know how to contact me and get a hold of me. All right, guys, with all of that out of the way today, we're going to get into our topic, which I'm actually really excited about. You guys sent some good ones in today. The first one we're going to cover today was one over HPV vaccination does not appear to boost risky teen sex study shows. Now, For those of you guys who don't know what HPV is, HPV is called the human papilloma virus. It is a virus that is a sexually transmitted disease. It can lead to typically two different forms. One of them is the traditionally formed, it creates problems inside the vagina, and it can get to a man. Most men don't experience very big problems with it. The other version of it creates a very, can be a very deadly form of cancer that forms typically inside the uterine wall. And it is a dangerous deal. And it is absolutely a major issue. And so they created a vaccination for it to throw out there. And so the debate has become, should we or should we not vaccinate our kids towards HPV? And so the two different sides of this is absolutely. We can't control our kids. Our kids may go out and have sex. And if they do, do we want them contracting a virus that we have a vaccination for? The other side then steps in and says, well, so what? They should know by that point what the answer to sex is and that sex can lead to sexually transmitted diseases. And if so, you know, if we give them some kind of HPV vaccination, then does doing that make them more likely to go have sex because now it is safe? Guys, this has been something that has been a part of the JAMA, you know, internal medicine journals and things like that for years. We have asked ourselves, can we get kids to not have sex through scaring them? Because the reality is that HPV is absolutely a very real thing. And it is absolutely very scary. It can kill kids, and it does kill people. And so... it's something that we have to really take a serious look at because we can't just ignore it. But we've been trying to take this approach of scaring this out of our kids now, and it's just not working. It's not creating results that we want in our kids. Scaring kids about alcohol is not enough to make them not drink alcohol in a lot of most blah 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 in most cases, and you know, trying to scare kids out of sex isn't working. So then, how do we do this? How do we get our kids to where they want to hear these things that we have to say, these issues where we're trying to protect them and to keep them safe? How do we get our kids to listen to us when we talk about that? It's pure and simple. Remember, Jeff and I talk about this all the time. It's the motto of the Family Podcast Network since 2011. It's all about your relationships. You see, you walk into any of this stuff, like HPV or any other thing, and you walk into this under the premise that I'm going to come in here and I'm going to make you scared of something, it rarely ever works. What works is relationship. But here's the most important thing. You have to have a really good reason for why you believe what you believe. I'm telling you, it's one of the most important things that there is. You have to understand why it is you believe what you believe. Because if you walk into this and says, don't have sex, and they say, why? Well, because the Bible said so. That ain't going to fly. I can't tell you how many Christians walk up to me and they're like, oh, Trey, we have these beliefs and that, and they won't adopt it, and we're so frustrated with them. Well, why do you believe that? Guys, in most cases, I believe with them. Well, why do you believe in that? Well, because the Bible says. That's not good enough. That's not good enough for anybody. Guys, I believe in the Bible. I believe in the things that it says. But I have reasoning behind every single one of my belief systems. You can't walk into a logic-bearing kid and expect to sit down and say, because I said so, and expect them to do good with that. If you really want to talk to your kid about this whole concept of HPV or anything like that, one of the things we recommend, be absolutely upfront and honest with them. Talk to them about what's going on. You see, we should really theoretically be discussing the concepts of human emotionality, of human sexuality, and those kinds of things long before we ever sit down and start talking about HPV. Now, I know this kind of sounds like I'm fussing at you guys, and I don't mean it to be a fuss, but we need to be talking about these things very, very early. Why? Well, so, like, what do we talk about here at the Family Podcast Network? Some of you guys are like, Trey, aren't your kids way too young? I've raised so many kids now that weren't mine. And so we've got one that we raised who's in college. I consider her my daughter. She calls me dad. I've got another one who's just about to graduate. We've got another one who's just about to turn 16. And so we've had these discussions with every single one of them. And not all of our conversations have been successful in communicating what we believe. But almost all of our conversations go along the lines of we discuss heartstrings and heartstring connections, how sex is wonderful and that we never pull any punches on that, that it is absolutely fantastic. And we also discuss how it creates connections in between people. And when we create those connections, it has a tendency to be very difficult because we're rarely in a position in young ages to be able to commit. And so because we're not able to commit at those young ages, it often leads to a lot of hurt, a lot of heartbreak. Not an easy conversation to have. It's very difficult in our society nowadays. It really emphasizes and pushes for us to get together. It's hard to work, but it's a conversation that we have. And these kind of conversations need to occur very early. My biggest problem is that I didn't get to work with these kiddos until much later in their lives. I wish they could have lived with me and we could impart to them a lot of these belief systems in the earlier stages of life. But we didn't get to do that, so we're able to communicate that. And the good thing is that at least one or two of them have made some mistakes that have turned out the way we have said. And they've heard that, and they've really taken that to heart. And so it's got a good effect in that, but talking to your kids in that capacity is one of the best ways to handle this. Is just be upfront with them, be honest, talk with them about these kinds of things. The reality is, them getting the vaccination or not does not actually seem to boost their sexual behavior. I'm not saying go out and get this HPV vaccination. That is not the point in this today. You absolutely have to decide for yourself whether or not this works. Then you got to talk to your kid about it. And I mean, that's the hardest part of all of this, is that we do have to sit and we have to have these conversations. We've got other shows that I'm going to leave to you guys to go listen to figure out a little bit more about how do we talk about sex. I do want to move on to the next article before we get into too much more of this. Our next article is actually was sent to us by, I forgot the name, Helen. Helen sent this over to us. And she mentioned, I was surprised at this, my preschool age kiddo, apparently she homeschools, my preschool age kiddo naps a lot. And I saw this article, is this something that should be an issue? Should I be allowing my kid to rest? And basically, I'm going to summarize the article for you guys. They said that they took a look at what was happening with kids with their midday naps. And what was happening was, when kids would get midday naps, they would have a tendency to stay up later, and that they would not be able to fall asleep as well, and they didn't get as deep a sleep. One actually very particular point in this article is that napping during the day was only consistently linked to falling asleep later, getting less sleep overall, and having poorer quality sleep, particularly among children older than 2, the studies found. Very, very interesting article on this. And let me tell you why this caught my attention, particularly when it was sent over to us by Ellen, is that we kind of had similar experiences to that. With our kids, all the way about the age of 2, we found that naps started becoming more and more difficult. With our oldest daughter, Anna, we were able to pretty much do naps for the most part, and they worked out okay. And so we never really questioned that. But with our next kid, it got a little more difficult to do naps. And then especially with the third, because now Anna was starting to get a lot older than the second and the third. And so, you know, she was able to stay up and she was able to do okay. And what we found was especially around that age of 2, that if we continuously try to put kids down for nap, we actually had a harder time in the evening. Now, we have a much more lax ability to do things in the evenings than most people do. Now, the reasoning for that being is that we homeschool our kids, and so we don't have an early morning rise time and all that good jazz. But with that said, We stopped doing nap times for kids about 2, because what we found was that it really wasn't producing any better results than what we were able to get whenever we didn't nap. And so this was another one of those articles that was surprising, in that I'd never actually seen it put down on paper, but it really didn't surprise me because we had this very similar results to that as well. And so what we're finding is that if kids take naps during the day, they have a tendency to stay up longer and not go to bed at night as well. And so letting your kids get tired out. Now, if only it were just that easy, right? And it's not just that easy, because what's happening is that our kids are having these experiences of getting late in the evening, and they're super, super tired and groggy and grumpy and those kinds of things as well. So I think it's really easy for us to say, well, man, I think I would rather just, you know, not have to mess with this, because if my kid's getting tired, I'll just give them a nap and they'll feel better and then it won't be so difficult. I do admit that is a major piece of that, and we've thought about that as well. But what we found is just put our kids to bed a little bit earlier. And if they're sleepy, we let them crawl into bed. We almost always let them watch a little bit of a show to wind down. But what we found is that since we've cut out naps, especially for the two-year-old and up, that when they really need that nap, they just go take one. But the day, most of the time, they don't take a nap. And what we found is that they'll take their little baths in the evenings and they'll brush their teeth and they crawl into bed. And the next thing you know, that two-year-old is zonked out. And it's worked out really good for us because we balance what we call video night, which is the night where the kids like to play YouTube videos of people playing Minecraft, and then cartoon night, which is the night where they have to watch a cartoon, something that our two-year-old Charlotte can enjoy a little bit more. And what we found is that since we cut out naps, now they all go in there on cartoon night. They start watching cartoons. They prefer watching videos, the YouTube videos. But they'll start watching the cartoons. Well, then Charlotte, the two-year-old, falls asleep within 10 minutes of laying down. Then the kids come in and say, hey, Charlotte's asleep. Can we watch videos? So it all kind of works itself out. But I think we get really hung up on these ideas that kids must need naps. I think it's difficult not to, because as parents, we get so tired and we get so frustrated that we kind of want our kids to put down. And we put our kids down to a nap for our sake more than just for theirs. Sorry, I had to get a little sip of Earl Grey tea there before I started coughing. And so that it really frustrates us because we want these naps for our kids. But in kind of a bottom line is we can be producing more problems for us than we're actually preventing by napping our kids. I'm not saying that you should stop a nap if that's what you've been doing. But be thinking about, is there a way to creatively start phasing a nap out for your two-year-old and up and start moving to that point? We call it rest time in our family. Rest time is not synonymous with nap time. That does not mean that a kid has to fall asleep. It just means that it's kind of a period of the time of the day where kids go and they sit down and they rest, and sometimes they get on iPads and play games for a while and all that kind of jazz. Fundamentally, it's my wife's get the crap out of my house, you know, or get the crap out of my face for a little while. She didn't ever say it that way, but you get the mentality where she needs a break. She just needs a break from the kids. And she'll often take one through that. And so it's a wonderful option. I do encourage you to at least think about it and consider whether or not you're willing to do that. So interesting article. I appreciate you sending that in, Ellen. All right. We kind of have a conglomeration of articles that come from John, not our longstanding John, who's on here quite a few times with his articles. This was another John, John R. And then we had another one sent over by Shelley. Both of them in regards to measles. And one of the articles that they sent over to us was by Terry Haley. And is measles the return to the new normal? And there was another one that I also got sent over. One of these is actually from a fellow listener to the Survival Podcast Network. That's a place that we also listen to and subscribe to, as well as a supporting member. And anyway, it was a really good article he sent me over there. Apparently it was linked by Jack the other day. And just a great little article. So I'm just going to kind of bring a synopsis as to the vax, anti-vax. And if you want a full-length, in-depth thought of my belief systems on that, go check out the article that we did, or the show that we did on anti-vaccination versus vaccination and where we lie. Now, you guys know I'm pretty crunchy granola. We're a crunchy granola little family. We're gardeners. We're holistic type people. You know, we try to avoid the doctor when we can and all that other jazz. So a lot of people automatically really, chalk us up just straight up saying, oh, Trey's definitely going to be an anti-vaxxer. That is actually not true. Even with a lot of our crunchy granola beliefs, we do believe in holistic type approaches to things. We do believe, I particularly am fairly anti-medication. Not anti-medication, but I am just very cognizant about when I allow myself to take it and when I don't. Particularly for reasons right now. Right now, I'm struggling with a pretty rough case of bronchitis. I'm pretty doped up right now, so that's why I'm not coughing. But it's been pretty bad the last couple of days. And I'm taking a steroid pack. Oh, my Lord, the steroids that I'm taking, man. You have to take like six twice for, two times a day for the start. And today I'm on the five. I'm on five a day. And then tomorrow it'll be four, and the next day is three. And let me tell you, this stuff, man, I have some sensitivity to the steroids, man. I mean, it is twerking. I mean, I am not twerking. I am not twerking, and don't imagine it. I am tweaking out. And I had shaking hands today, all this stuff. So I have a very low, low tolerance for medicine, which is great in a situation like this because, it means that it works. But we're pretty crunchy granola in all this kind of stuff that we do. And even though I believe in that, I'm not an anti-vaccine. type guy. And a lot of that is a personal responsibility thing. I don't think vaccines are poor. I don't think that vaccines are a bad idea. I don't think that the concept of a vaccine is a horrible idea. The concept of bringing in the antigenic determinants to major diseases that are out there in our world today to give our body the basic understanding of how to fight these things is not a bad deal. Here's what I have a problem with. Number one, nobody's doing the research. What are these things made out of? What do they come from? How are they tested? In a society to where we have the ability to pay off people in the Food and Drug Administration and the FDA so very easily with so very little accountability, I get very dubious about these things, these medical breakthroughs that come through, because I'm asking myself how much money was had to be paid to pass this along. Was any? Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it's great. I don't know. But I don't think we stop and ask the questions about vaccines that we should be. Number two, I don't think we're spreading these things out enough. I think we have a tendency to give our kids these dadgum vaccines, and we do them all at one time in these huge lumps, and we just try to slam their bodies with it. Have I read research that I think is potentially indicative that there might be a connection between vaccines and autism? Very possibly. Do I think that I can now use that as like my springboard to say I'm never going to get my kid a vaccination? I can't personally. There was the story that happened, and I'll tell you, there's a specific reason why for that. We had this story of these kids that got sick whenever they went to Disneyland or Disney World or whatever it is, and they got sick with rubella. Now, they think that they've traced that back to probably somebody, you know, who was a foreigner or somebody who did not, somebody who had gone to a foreign country that probably brought those diseases in. And they infected these kiddos that were unvaccinated because they were too young for MMR. Yeah, that's mumps, rubella, and rubella, for those of you guys who maybe aren't familiar. But they immediately started blaming the anti-vax community. Well, I don't think that's what brought it to these kids at Disney World. Not at this point. Not seeing some of the demographics of people they had at Disneyland that day. I'm pretty confident it could have come from anywhere else. However, it is beginning to spread inside some of the anti-vax families. That is one of the reasons why I think that we have an incumbent responsibility to at least consider whether or not we need to get our kids vaccinated. Here's what's happening in the vaccine field. What's happening is there's being a line drawn in the sand, and you're either for them or you're against them. And if you're not on the side of the anti-vaxxers who are saying that, you know, look at all this bad research and look at all these things that they do wrong, look at these potential correlatives that connect these two things like autism and this stuff together. If you're not 100% diehard on their side of it, then you're against them. Or if you're not on the other side of a pro-vaxxer where you're saying like, yeah, you know, really, you know, if you take a look at some of the research, it shows that these do help. You know, we've pretty much phased out all of these different things. If you're not willing to say that they're completely 100% right, then all of a sudden you're their enemy. And now you're stuck in this little weird middle place where you're not a pro-vaxxer, you're not an anti-vaxxer, and everybody's looking at you funny. The reality is for us in our family, we kind of take a middle ground. Number one, we say stretch these mothers out. We don't know how effective that it can be on the body if we just dump all of these different sicknesses into our system. We just don't know. And so we take the opportunity to say spread these suckers out. You have the right to spread out your vaccinations of your kids as long as you want. Every time we go in, we frustrate the crap out of the folks that do these things, because I work for a nursing school. And we have a program in there that's an immunization program. And so we utilize that program there. And so when we come in there, I mean, it frustrates her so much every time as we come in. They're like, okay, you're behind on this and this and this and this and this and this. You've got 6 we need to get done. Okay, I need you to do 2. Really? You're just going to do 2? You understand that right now it's the herd that's protecting you, right? What they mean is all the vaccinated kids out there are the only thing that's protecting us. And we say, that's fine. That's wonderful. And we'll be back. You know, we'll be back. But we spread those out 2 over every month, 2-3 months sometimes to get those done. We just believe in spreading that out. Secondarily, we also believe in doing research behind every single one of them that we receive. And this is where you really get into the crazy stuff. Because this article they sent from us from Collective Evolution It starts to talk about it. Says, let's pull this part out. I said, that saying being said, when government creates laws that protect vaccine manufacturers from being sued by families who have been injured by vaccines, and when you realize that $2.5 billion has been paid out in compensation over the last 23 years due to vaccine injuries, you start to realize that, yes, one size does not fit all when it comes to vaccines. Do you hear me in that? Guys, I am not an anti-vaccine guy. We just got finished going to the health department last week to get some vaccines for our kids that we wanted to catch up on, the ones that we had researched and read up on. But listen to me carefully. There is $2.5 billion that has been paid out in compensation over the last 23 years due to vaccine injuries. Listen to me. Vaccines have associated dangers. I'm not saying that you run on the warpath of, oh, la, 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 they're all devilish and we hate them. I'm not saying you do that, but you need to stop and smell roses. Take a look at these things, and you need to be weighing benefits versus risks. Now, guys, I know that's not an easy thing to answer, and I understand that, but, guys, there is article after article from the FDA. The FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, this is not somebody who's out there who's got a specific agenda to show. But studies are showing that kids that are, guys, this is FDA again, studies are showing that kids that are vaccinated are not as healthy, and they're sometimes more susceptible to disease than unvaccinated children. I've been following this stuff for the last 10 years, and I'm telling you, it's the facts. These kiddos that are getting vaccinated all the time with as heavy stuff as they can are not turning out to be more healthy than our kids that aren't. So, am I saying that we need to, like, totally dump all the ideas of vaccines and never come back to them? That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is, this entire thing of vaccination is profitable. Or else you wouldn't be able to dump $2.5 billion to pay out compensations like this. All I'm asking from you guys is to challenge what you hear. Challenge what you hear people being said. Unfortunately, the pro-vaccine argument is an emotional one that simply, you know, says that, you know, we just need to take science for what it is, and we just need to avoid all these things. And you start mixing that in with the fact that it has such the potentiality to be a financial gain. It starts to create a huge issue here. Is it making people any healthier? I don't think it is. Do I say that we need to stop doing them? No, not at all. But I want you to consider a few things. I'm going to read you guys some of the things that are in a lot of vaccinations. Many vaccinations contain these following chemicals. They contain aluminum phosphate, aluminum sulfate, aphotericin B, animal tissues including pig blood, horse blood, and rabbit brain, arginine hydrochloride, dog kidney and monkey kidney, dibasic potassium phosphate, chicken embryo, chicken egg, duck egg, calf bovine serum, fetal bovine serum, formaldehyde, formalin, gelatin, gentamicin sulfate, glycerol, human diploid cells, those are cells that originate from an aborted fetal tissue, hydrocortisone, hydrolyzed gelatin, mercury thermosol, monosodium glutamate, MSG, like you know, you've heard those before, neomycin sulfate, I'm not going to try that one. Let's see. Octophenol ethoxylate, phenol red indicator, potassium chloride, potassium diphosphate, polymyxin B, polysorbate 20, porcine or pig pancreas. Let's see. Residual MRC5 proteins, sorbitol, thermosol, Vero cells, which is a continuous line of monkey kidney cells, and washed sheep's red blood. Did you know that that's in a large majority of some of the most popular immunizations that are out there? Take the mercury thermosol that we talked about. That is known to cause neurological and immunological damage, and that they are not credible. Some of the stuff gets thrown into these vaccines willy-nilly, and often we don't know that is what is happening. We don't realize that these things are inside of that. Now, some of these are like aborted, you know, human baby fetuses and stuff like that. And so that's more of a moral issue than it is a physiological one. But I think we have to be aware of these things. And if you didn't know that these things are in some of your vaccines, I encourage you to do research on them. If you've got a new vaccine that's coming up for your kid, do a little research on them and see what people are saying about them and see what's in them. And understand what you're getting into. So anyway, I don't want to ruminate on this too much longer. We're getting to about the 30-minute mark, and this is taking me way too long because, albeit y'all may not be able to hear it very well, I'm having to take lots of pauses because this is so this is such a different program for me. I'm having to pause just a lot. So I want to read you another article by a Lauren Apfel. This is over at the Washington Post, and it caught my attention because I think we have a tendency, you know, a lot of you guys out there that listen to this show are fathers of mothers who are stay-at-home moms. We've got some stay-at-home dads, and we've got some moms that are stay-at-home moms, and I think we forget about this. It's a concept that I think is forgotten, and we actually started practicing about the last 8 months of doing this with my wife just because she was getting so much. But this little article says, I'm a stay-at-home mom for 5 days and I will officially be on vacation. Consider this me punching my time card. The average American worker is entitled to 16 days of paid leave per year. If being a stay-at-home mom is tantamount to a full-time job, isn't this a benefit we deserve as well? Now, I don't like how she said that, because anytime we start moving into the words deserve, you know, we start moving into senses of entitlement, and that's rarely, when we're in that position where I deserve, we're rarely in a position where we're focusing on the needs of others. However, yes, I do think that stay-at-home moms and stay-at-home dads do need these kinds of things. The reality is far murkier, because both the nature of the work of parenthood is far murkier, because the nature of the work of parenthood, sorry guys, I had to skip that back over. The nature of the work of parenthood and the extent to which it is valued by society. A child-free holiday, regardless of parents' employment status, is not without controversy. Here is the paradox, though. We talk ad nauseum about the exhaustion and the manifold difficulties inherent in raising young children. This particular person here has analyzed it painstakingly in her bestseller, All Joy and No Fun, concluding that early parenthood is the phase during which people are, in fact, least happy, and yet we are more hard-pressed than ever to give ourselves the proper break. See, I have a hard time with this. Why do I think that a lot of parents are considering themselves to be not happy? I think we run into this and say, oh, well, we were happy before, and then we had kids, and now we're not happy anymore. I actually don't think it's that simple. I don't think it's as simple as that when we have kids, we become unhappy. What I think really happens is we are, again, a society that's very hedonistic. Remember, hedonism is focusing on pleasure being the ultimate good, and pain and uncomfortability being the ultimate thing to avoid. And so when you walk into it with this mentality that I don't want to be uncomfortable because feeling good is the best thing that we can get into, we move into our parenting with that, and of course we're going to be unhappy. It's one of the reasons why we teach our kids that pain is not a bad thing. It's okay to hurt. It's okay to be sad. The reality is, if we're not sad when someone passes away or a pet passes away, it means that we weren't close with them. You see, hurt in and of itself is uncomfortable, yet it is beautiful. It grows people. It heals things, believe that or not. And it connects us to each other. Fundamentally, it connects us to each other. It is a beautiful thing. And if we spend all of our times avoiding it and we walk into parenting a thing that is uncomfortable and sometimes flat out painful physiologically for the wife, for the mom, when she's birthing them, but then also just the things that we go through. And if we believe that when we walk into parenting that it should be comfortable, that it should not be uncomfortable, we set ourselves up for an almost instantaneous failure. Of course we're going to be unhappy. Then what's the alternative then, Trey? What are you trying to say is the alternative here? The alternative is to walk into it and understanding that it's going to be difficult. But it's not about me. I'm important, guys. I'm not trying to say that, like, you should walk around and say, well, I'm not as important as everybody else. Yes, you are important. However, your beliefs, your needs, your wants, the things that you have to have are not as important. Or at least not more important than your kids. And so we have to walk into this where we understand that learning to find happiness with our kids is about learning to understand that they are growing and that it is our job to help them grow and that it's not all about me. It's not all about the fact that I need to get to bed. It's 1:42 in the morning right now. I've been trying to work on this podcast for an hour and 40 minutes, which is much longer than I normally have to work on it because I'm trying to figure out this new program. You know what? It's something that I walked into. And tomorrow when I get up and tomorrow if my kids are grumpy or whatever else in the morning, it is my responsibility to take care of them. To see that their needs and their desires and their wants and their grumpiness and their bad days are just as important as mine. Now, with that said, do I think that parents that are stay-at-home parents should be getting breaks? The answer to that is absolutely. I do think that we should be giving that to our significant others who stay home with kids. It's very, very important. We started doing that with my wife about 8 or 9 months ago, and we just set it up to where my wife was able to go into town. Now, what we really do is we basically let her go do her grocery shopping in the evening without any kids. She could do it at other times if she wanted to, but we've just found that that it gets her out of the house and it lets her listen to her, you know, her audio book, her book, you know, book by Audible, and just kind of get out of the house overall. And we've had a tremendous amount of success with it. I highly recommend it. If your spouse or your stay at home whoever has not been getting out of the house, give them that opportunity to get out and enjoy some time away. Take a little vacay. Yes, my wife has gone and stayed in a hotel by herself just to be away. She's gone and watched movies by herself. Sometimes she just wants to go grocery shop by herself. And that it's okay. That is not a bad sign. And allowing them to have that opportunity to decompress this can be very, very good. So highly encourage you that you set that up. Great article. Thanks for sending that over, guys. It's time for me to go ahead and wrap this up because this took way too long to record. And we're going to get better at this new software as we go. And it's going to get shorter and shorter, just like GarageBand did when I first started using it. So that is all that we're going to have for this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Don't forget to come join Jeff and I this Friday where we should have our next episode of the Real Family Guys podcast. We've got a new, it's a different software, it's a different recording, it's a whole new experience. So Jeff and I are going to give it a whirl Friday. Hopefully it'll work out with all this new stuff that we've got to learn. Guys, thanks for your patience with me as we're trying to figure out all this new system here. I think it's going to sound pretty nice. However, we got to make it roll, got to learn it, got to square it away. But that's what we do for you guys. Hope you guys have a great day, a great week. We'll see you all on Friday.